Hiya, is that Roz? Roselle, sit.
Yeah, speaking.
Hi, this is Francesca from Minor Slow calling about your application to the Scottish Redress Scheme.
Yeah.
We've got today. Is now a good time to speak?
Yeah, fine.
Perfect. So before we begin, I just need to confirm details for data protection. So would I be able to take your full name, please?
Yeah, it's Roselle Riley. Do you want to spell that?
So I've got it on the system, so it's Rozel and then Riley with EIL.
Yeah.
Yeah, perfect. And were you known by any other names at all while you were in
No.
care or beforehand?
No.
Okay.
Oh, excuse the phrase that I use it, but the woman that gave birth to me, I don't remember this, she might have had me under Smith, which I would have never been aware of.
Okay. And on that note as well, would you be able to tell me your birth parents' names if possible?
Yeah, my dad is James Riley.
That's Jace.
James, J-A-N, yes.
And your birth mother?
Her actual name is Elizabeth Ann McDermott.
Elizabeth Ann McDermott.
Yes, McDermott with a D at the end.
McDermott.
But she goes by Betty Smith or Becky Riley.
Becky Riley, did you say?
Yeah.
Becky Riley. And what was the other one? Something Smith.
Yeah, Betty Smith.
And was her name at the time when you were born Elizabeth Ann McDermott?
Yeah.
Okay, no worries. It's just in case, in regards to grabbing your records and stuff, a lot of them that might be under your parents' names. So we just need those
It
just in
might,
case.
yeah, it might have been Elizabeth Ann Riley. I think it was on my birth certificate.
Elizabeth Ann Riley. Is that Ann with an E?
Yeah.
Perfect, thank you. And your date of birth?
5/10/76.
And your current address?
Is 31 Shaftesbury Road.
Good. And your postcode?
LE30QN.
And did you know your address before you were placed into care? Or just the general area or anything you can remember, just the
Yeah, so I know, well, I was also born in Glasgow. I lived with my dad. We moved down to the Ayrshire coast, to so Stevenson, Saw Coast of Dawson, that area. And that was 17 Clark Crescent Road or Street. I think it was just called 17 Clark Crescent. Yeah, it was 17 Clark Crescent.
And where was that you said? Was it Ayrshire you said?
Yeah, that was Stevenson.
Stevenson. Is that north or south? Sorry.
Oh, I can't remember.
That's okay, I can have a look into that.
Yeah.
And then, are you registered with a GP at the moment that I'd be able to take, please?
Yeah. Oh, crazy. Hang on a second.
Just a practice name, anything like that.
You know, I've gone completely blank. It's right at
It's
the top of the street as well. Let me just find it. West End Medical Centre, that's it.
perfect. Thank you very much. So obviously I appreciate you discussing experiences connected to this application. It can be difficult than sat in. So at any point during the phone call, if you need a break, any explanation or support, or if you want to continue another time, just let me know, okay?
Yep.
And do you suffer from any communication difficulties or vulnerabilities that you want to make me aware of?
Not really. I mean, I've got a few health conditions, but I wouldn't say that it makes me vulnerable.
Okay, no problem. So the purpose of the call today, so I'll explain the scheme to you. We'll go through your options, explain how INS Law operates, go through the funding and fees, and then gather initial information to assess whether we can assist you and how we can assist you. Is that okay so
Okay.
far? Do you understand everything?
Yeah.
Perfect. So the redress scheme provides financial payments, apologies, and support to survivors of historical child abuse in care in Scotland prior to the 1st of December 2004. So I want to make sure you know all of your available options before you decide to instruct us. So you're able to apply directly to the redress scheme by yourself without a solicitor, or you can instruct a solicitor who operates under the Scottish Government Legal Fees Scheme, and then they're paid directly by the government for assisting you. Under the government scheme, the solicitors may receive up to £2,000 plus the VAT from the government for helping you, regardless of whether you're successful or not with your application. So we're INS Law, so we don't operate under the statutory scheme, so we don't claim any government-funded fees. If you decide to instruct us, you'd be choosing a private legal representation under a conditional fee agreement, which will be sent to you following this phone call, and we will not be paid by the government for helping you. So would I just be able to confirm that you've not instructed any of the solicitors to act in any relation or anything to do with the redress scheme?
No.
Oh, perfect. So did you double check you understand all of your options?
Yeah. So how's, I just wanted to double check, so like, if you were to represent me, how does that work? Did I pay you or how does that work?
So our agreement, so we operate on a no-win, no-fee basis. So if you're unsuccessful, you pay nothing. And then if you withdraw your application or advice, you pay nothing. So if you are successful and you receive the redress payment, our fees consist of a basic charge based on time spent and then a success fee. So the total fees, including the VAT, are capped at no more than 16% plus of the redress payment, and you never pay more than that agreed cap. So it's no win, no fee. So it's only if you are successful.
Okay.
And then I just want to make clear as well, so I can't guarantee that you will be successful or the level of award the scheme may give you. They operate on a discretionary basis. I can explain that in greater detail during this call. So let's just confirm that you understand everything so far?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. So if you instruct us, so we assist with whether you're eligible to apply to the scheme. We gather and review all the evidence for you, prepare and submit the application, do all the correspondence with the scheme themselves, so you don't have to do any of that with them. We could then advise you on any offers made, explain the statutory waiver if an award is offered, and then if you're unhappy or anything with the outcome, we can assist them with any reconsiderations or review processes within the scheme as well.
Okay.
So if a redress offer is made, I'll fully explain the statutory waiver before you decide whether to accept anything. And it is important. So if you accept an award, it can affect your ability to pursue future civil claims relating to the matters. So you're not expected to accept an offer without fully understanding the consequences. Is that all okay so far?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. So if you decide to proceed with us, you have a 14-day cancellation period after you sign the agreement. So you can cancel within that period for any reason without charge. And also, so we can start the work immediately while your cancellation rights still remain. So would you be happy for us to do that?
Yep.
Perfect. So following this phone call, so we require proof of identity for verification purposes. So I'll need a copy of photographic identification and then a proof of address dated within 3 months of today's date. So I'll send the information via email with everything and what we can accept and everything like that. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Perfect. I'll just begin go through the application now, if that's all okay with you.
Yep.
So I've got on here, so your address is 31 Chesby Road, and then I've got your postcode down as well. Can I just confirm what area that is?
That's Leicester. Leicester.
Perfect. And the only other name you might have been was Rizal Smith, yeah?
Yeah.
In regards to contacting you, so we usually contact by phone, email, or text message. Is there any form that you wish to not be contacted via?
No, just phone or email is fine for me to be contacted.
And have you been diagnosed with any terminal illnesses?
No.
No. So on your application as well, you can add a beneficiary. So if anything was to happen to you, the application then would be passed on to them. So would you like to add one?
Is that something I can do at a later date?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I'll do that at a later date.
No problem. In regards to any impact factors, so have you received any relevant payments, so criminal injuries compensation, anything related to the abuse or court settlements, or advance payment schemes or anything like that?
No.
No? And do you have any criminal convictions?
No.
Okay, so moving on that, so I just need to take the names of the care settings you were in with the approximate years that you were there, if you can remember. If that's okay.
Yeah, that may be a bit of a challenge, because I know there was very little when this was all happening.
Yeah, no, that's okay. So in regards to, so if you can't remember the names or times, just approximate years, and then when it comes to then gathering all your records and the evidence, when we get in touch with the councils, they might be able to provide then a list of all of your placements to help us clarify the details. So just any estimates or anything you can remember is helpful.
Yeah. All right, so classic. The first one I've got very, very big memories of was in the children's home in Irvine. I think I was there with my older brother, my younger sister, and I think I was around about 5 or 6, maybe.
Yeah.
I might be a bit younger.
So in regards to that, so I've got two names here, so if they ring a bell. So we've got Burnside House and then Dalrymple. Sorry, I can't say that word. Does any of those ring a bell?
What was the second one? I know you struggled with that name.
So Dalrymple Place Children's Home.
Let me type that. So Dalrymple
and then Place.
Oh, Dalrymple.
Yeah.
What was the other one?
At Burnside House.
I couldn't tell you for definite because I think I was really little at the time.
That's okay, no problem. So the local area helps us anyway. So you would say guessing about 5 to 6 years old there.
I might have been maybe even 4 at the time because I know we were raped. That would have been actually because that was my auntie passed away. So that would have been, I think, 1982.
Perfect.
Because my dad broke his back the following year.
So about 6 years old. Perfect. And then following that one, were you placing another one?
Yeah, so I know the following year, my dad broke his back. My dad got custody of us, my brother and my sister. And that's in 10th of March 1980. My dad broke his back on the oil rigs. And we had to go and live with the other parent. And her and her partner, they were very violent and aggressive towards us, and they used to put us into a lot of foster care and children's homes when they wanted to go out and get drunk and all that sort of carry on. So I know we were in a number of children's homes and foster places, but I know two of them, there was a foster placement in Largs, and there was a children's home in Largs.
So you were placed with your other parent and her partner.
Yeah.
And then she put you into different foster cares, is that right?
Okay. Yeah, foster care and children's homes.
So were they all short term or were there any long term or was it just kind of a lot of moving around?
It was just a lot of moving around and all that. Just like whenever she wanted to go out and get drunk and whatever else, she would just dump us in foster care and all that sort of thing. And take us back out when the money dried up because she needed the money.
Okay.
But I know for definite, there was definitely a children's home in Largs, and there was definitely a foster home in Largs as well.
Okay. And so how long did that go on for?
Them two placements. I think the foster home was... It might possibly have been a couple of weeks. The children's home was a few months.
So how long were you in the children's home in? Is it Irvine, Irvine?
In Irvine? I'd have to tell you. I really don't know because that's just quite a little at the time. So.
Yeah, no, that's okay. So you were placed back with... you were the parent and the partner, and then they placed you in and out of foster care and children's homes and that when they just, when they wanted to get drunk and stuff, and then they'd pick you up when they needed the money, did you say?
Yeah.
Yeah. So was that kind of, so that kind of system, how long did that go on for? So how long were you under her care and then in and out?
I think that lasted a total of, so my dad broke his back in 1983. I I think that person lasted about 4 years because my dad was paralysed for a year, and then he went to America to fight the oil rig company there.
Yeah.
I think that lasted about 4 or 5 years.
Okay, so we're about 83 to 88, roughly.
I'd say so.
Okay.
And then I'll say we went back into my dad's care.
So why were you, can I ask, why were you placed in care in the first instance?
The first children's home, the one in Irvine.
Yeah.
That one was because my dad's sister, she was really young at the time, she passed away, and my dad didn't want us going to the other parent because of how violent and abusive they were towards us, so to protect us, yeah, that's why we went there.
And so were you under the, so was it your dad's choice, or was it social workers that took you away?
No, that was my dad's choice, so that he could sort of, like, try and grieve and deal with the funeral and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Okay. And then when you placed back with your dad then, was that the...
No, so I was placed back, obviously we went back to live with my dad. We then moved to, we had a bit of a rough time, and sort of like my dad lost all his businesses, and he never declared bankrupt, but we ended up living in a lot of rough areas, not just trying to get myself by and things like that.
Yeah.
But then... And so I was 15 years old, and we lived in a really bad area called Govan in Glasgow. Yeah. And we were all kind of like struggling to cope with what had happened and that sort of thing. But then when I was 15, I put myself into a children's home in Uddingston because I had been drug-tied with alcohol and raped and that sort of thing. I was only 15 at the time. And didn't tell my dad. Basically, I kind of, once I went off the rails, I really struggled to go away, and I just thought I needed to get away. So I put myself into a home in Uddingston.
Yeah.
And I do believe that one of the members of staff there was grooming some of us. And I think me in particular was one of them, because if they have memories of things that happened that shouldn't have happened. I never talked to anybody, because back then you don't talk to anybody because you don't believe.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, just looks like a loose cannon kid in care.
Just a troubled child in care that lies.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. So then was that your last placement?
That was the last one, yeah.
Okay. So I got that now. So I just need to take a brief statement regarding the care settings, any incidents that happened, the long-term effects, how you felt while you were there, kind of what happened to you. So, would you be able to tell me so about the foster care in Largs? Is there anything about that one?
No, not really. To be honest with you, it was good. Didn't want to go back.
Yeah.
It was just a relief to get away from the abuse and all the stress.
In regards to, like, when your mum... Obviously, she put you into these places and you didn't have a good time at home. Was anyone aware, like social services, and they put you back there knowing anything that was happening? So with the scheme, it's not necessarily just what happened while you were in the care settings. It's how people were abandoned and dismissed by social services and things like that. So is there any instances like that that you can recall?
I believe the children's home in Irvine, from what my dad told me, I think social services... Actually, hang on a second, let me think.
That's okay.
I believe that social services became aware of, obviously, the death in the family of my dad's younger sister. They recommended to my dad to maybe put us into temporary foster care so that he could grieve and recover. And then, obviously... when he was ready, he just comes and gets us. But I believe, from what my dad told me, they actually tried to block him, and they tried to stop him from taking us. And from what I know, the other parent, she came to the children's home with her partner at the time, and they they told the staff, I do remember this. I remember them coming in and I remember them saying to the staff, I want the older brother, the younger sister, but the middle one, as in me, she went, she can stay, we don't want her. And I think the staff notified my dad. And
yeah.
He ran straight down and he was like, you're not having any of them. And I know there was a lot of like, a lot of stress and a lot of trauma for that because the staff were kind of like, well, we don't really know what to do. And I've just got sort of like these vague memories of the staff not being particularly good. Because
yeah.
I used to be really wet in the bed and things like that. And we used to get like shouted at or told off and, you know, like for things like that. But that was through all the abuse that I suffered.
Were you cared for in the way you should have been while you were there, or you getting pushed to the side, or just anything like that?
I don't believe we were cared in the way we should have been. No, I think we were just kind of we were kind of like singled out type of thing. It was like they weren't like violent towards us like that. It was more like just mental. It's like
Yeah, no. So the mental and the emotional abuse is a big factor in all this as well.
Yeah, and when like she turned up for like visits, suppose if you wanted to call it that, I was kept in my room, and she spent all her time with the other two, and I just was sat in my room thinking, well, you know, why does nobody want to see me, and why are the staff not letting me go and see, you know, like her and things like that. So
yeah, so they didn't look into it or question why you were being treated differently to them. They just kind of just listened and went, all right, and just left you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't this all professional? There's, I mean, obviously back then it's like kids were seen and not heard, and if they were heard, they were soon told to shut up and go away.
So are there any specific incidents or anything that happened while you were there that you can recall, or was it just the general overview of it all was just not looked after?
You just kind of felt like you were invisible. I felt like I was invisible. I didn't really matter.
So regards that then, so then you were placed back then, and then in and out of foster care and children's homes. So when you were living at home, is there anything that, so is it also being at home with things like that that happen, it's difficult to put that forward unless, say, social services were aware and sent you back there. So is there anything that was reported or anything like that?
No, but you know, I mean, I believe social services were kind of in the background somewhere. They knew we were being abused, but they turned a blind eye. They didn't care. I mean, I was black and blue. We were getting beatings, and I was like, when I was, at the time, I think I was 9 years old, I probably weighed about 3.5, 4 stone, because we were being starved and others carry on. But, of course, somebody would have been aware of it. It's just a case of, well, yeah, we're not dealing with this.
So you were taken into the foster care and children's homes, obviously malnourished and beaten, and they didn't question, they just took you and then sent you back.
Yep, pretty much. Like I say, we went into the foster care and the children's homes. Like I say, when she and her partner wanted to go out and get drunk, day drugs, and whatever else they wanted to do. And then, like I say, when the money dried up, they took us back out to claim the benefits. And when we got the benefits, we went back in again. And it was just that was just what it was.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there was one instance where we lived in an area called Largs, and I think it was only about...
What was that one, sorry? In Largs?
Sorry, not Largs. It was in Saltcote, again on the Ayrshire coast, and we were living with her and her partner. And so she must have been aware because, as I say, I was about 6 or 7, and I remember getting dragged out of the bed with the hair of the head, me and my sister, and because we wouldn't go to the shop at midnight, they got a belt. They had a big iron eagle on the back of it, which was my dad's job. He obviously didn't know what was going on. And we were basically battered black and blue. And I went to the doctor. And I went to school and I was told by her, you tell the school, you tell the doctor, you fell down the stairs. And that's the story that we went with. But
yeah.
You can see but it still maybe got involved, maybe did anything.
Yeah, the signs were all there, but no one looked into it. They just kept sending you back. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
And was that just obviously you said about 4 or 5 years, was just the whole time, it was just constantly things like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She used to make us, she used to get me and my sister to beat each other up in the lounge, and if whichever one lost the fight, they had to get a beating off of her and her partner at the time, and yeah, they were quite severe.
Yeah.
But again, it's like, maybe the schools, the GPs never, if they did see what was going on, they were turning a blind eye to it.
Yeah. She said, was it you were taken to the doctor after you said you got dragged out of bed? And was it that you told the GP that you fell down the stairs?
Yeah, the reason why I went to the GP is because of all the abuse, so I used to wet the bed an awful lot.
Yeah.
It was just a humiliation tactic on her part, and she, you know, like humiliate me in the surgery. But then, as I say, she'd say, I remember I had shorts on, and you could visibly see the rest of the bruise on the side of like my hips into my knee on the left hand side. I still remember it. And that's when she said to me, she went, we're going there because you keep wetting the bed and you smell and blah, 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 and all this carry on. And she went,
yeah.
You tell the doctor you fell down the stairs. Because the doctor did say, well, how did you get that bruise? And she just looked at me and I was like, I just fell down the stairs.
Yeah. And then, so following all that, then you were placed back with your dad, and then you put yourself down up in Govan, Glasgow. Do you recall the name of that place?
The children's home.
Yeah.
I kind of think it's actually burnt down. One of the kids after I left, they actually burnt the building down. I think it was just called Uddingston Children's Home. I think.
Okay, I should be able to look in and find
that. Yeah. It was the only children's home in Uddingston, I remember that.
Funny, so so when you were 15, you went to the children's home in Govan, so you said it was Uddingston.
Yeah, the area was called Uddingston.
Okay. Is that the same, the Govan one? Same one, yeah?
No, so Govan's one area, and so Uddingston, Govan is where I live, and then Uddingston is a different area.
Is it church? So Govan was where you lived with your dad?
Yeah.
Okay. And is there anything throughout your time in the Uddingston Children Home?
Yeah.
You said, would you be able to tell me about that one?
Yeah, that one. I remember, for some reason, I've got the name Lindsay in my head. I don't know if that was the staff member's first name or surname, but I remember this person.
Yeah.
Obviously, when I went in, he used to take some of the only day trips, as he would call it.
What was that story?
Sometimes he would take some of the kids, including myself, out for what he called day trips in his car. I remember it was a 5-seater. There was 3 in the back. I was always in the front. And he used to say to me, oh, do you want to learn to drive? And I'd be like, yeah, you know, I'm like 15 years old and quite naive. And he'd put my hand on the gear stick and then he'd put his hand on top. And it just didn't feel right. I mean, I was still recovering from the fact that I'd been raped and I hadn't even spoke to anybody about that because I just didn't want to.
Yeah.
And I could tell the way he was touching my hand and all that sort of stuff. And so I tried to avoid going. It just went on for a couple of months. But then I remember I had gone to bed and I know I had my pajamas on. I know for a fact I had pajamas. I had pajama top and pajama bottoms. And when I woke up, because I heard the door closing, and I could see the door close and I could see the light in the hall. And I sort of woke up and I realised that my top had been pulled up. And I'm like, it's one of them. It's like, did you just imagine that actually happened? Or?
Yeah. So obviously, with obviously what happened to you and stuff, you're more aware of the signs and you remember you woke up and your clothes had been moved and you remember the door closing.
Yeah. And again, it's like I didn't say nothing because if you're 15, who's going to believe you? So I
Yeah.
just kind of kept it to myself, and I just thought, I just tried to steer clear of this person. I believe his name was John Lindsay for some reason. That name seems to just sit in my head.
Yeah.
And I just started going off the rails because of what had happened. So I started like just what teenagers do, you know, when you're struggling to cope with things that happened to you, you just sort of
Yeah.
go off the rails, and there was just no support at all.
Obviously, you didn't like verbally ask for help, but the signs were all there, and you were
Yeah.
just abandoned.
He would always make a beeline for me when we were in the home. You know, like if we were done cooking, he'd come in and he'd sort of like make a beeline to come to me and talk to me. I mean, whether he was doing things to other kids, I don't know. And if he was, none of us ever spoke about it. We just kind of never said nothing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, he just kind of focused on certain individuals.
Did he any say anything inappropriate or like is there anything you can recall? Is it just like uncomfortable touch and just inappropriate behavior?
It would just be like you know, just touching you, brushing past you, and there was other staff members around, they could see what was going on, but nothing was ever said. If anything was said, it was never we were never asked anything. But it was always a case of, oh, I'm going out for a drive, do you want to come with us? Or Roselle, as they call me then, but you come with us. And it's kind of one of them, it's fight or flight. It's like, do you do as you're told, do you not do as you're told? And it's like,
Yeah.
oh, I need to do as I'm told because I'm in this life. And yeah.
You say that you were known as Rosella when you were there?
Roselle, not just Roselle.
Rosella.
Yeah.
So I've got that now. So I've written all of that down. Is there anything else that you obviously not like to speak about, but anything else you think would be beneficial for the application or any of the statement section that you'd like to go through?
Not that I can
No.
think of at the minute.
Yeah, no, that's okay. So following this, so this is the only section now for the initial application where you'll have to do anything, just this phone call. And then following down the line then, when we gather evidence and all the reports, you'll have to do a witness statement with a member of the team. So it'll be just more in depth. So obviously we'll have all the evidence with us and the dates and records and everything like that. So it'll just be probably more like question based, just to clear everything up and clarify. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, and I ask as well, would you rather it be with a female member of staff or are you okay with either?
I mean, female, ideally, but if it's not, then it's fine. It's
Okay.
fine.
No problem. So regarding that now, so I'll write up the statements for you following this phone call, and I'll just go through it. So there's two types of applications that we can pursue under the scheme. So there's the fixed payment of £10,000, and it's a fixed amount award regardless of the severity of abuse you suffered, or there's the individually assessed payment of up to £100,000. So it's decided by a closed panel dependent on the level you suffered. So based on previous awards made by the scheme and everything we've spoken about today, I'd like to pursue the individually assessed payment, if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you won't be required to attend any meetings of the scheme in person. So we'll provide everything, we'll provide the statements and everything for you on your behalf. So it'll just be the witness statement. And then if we require any extra information that can help us get your records, we might give you a call. They'll just be short calls. And then following this now, so when I've written up your statement, I'll send you over the contracts. So it'll be a client care letter, a conditional fee agreement, and a letter of authority. And then the part one and three, so it'll be all of your details, and then the part then about the care settings. Of course, you're under no pressure or obligation to proceed, so take your time to look through them. And if you'd like, I can give you a call when I send them over. So if you have any questions, you don't have to, it's just I like to offer it in case, so then I can talk you through the contracts. Is that something you'd like?
Yes, Sandra.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, so it shouldn't be too long. Call within the next hour, is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Perfect. So do you have any questions for me?
Not at the minute.
No, perfect.
See what happens.
Brilliant. Okay, so I'll get this written up now and then I'll send over the contracts and I'll give you a call, okay?
Okay.
Amazing. Okay. Thank you very much for your time today.
No problem.
You. I'll speak to you soon, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.